hear that? This is madness.
When I got your ears open, you reached for the good you were not.
Nerf herder.
I am a Jedi.
Too short for a stormtrooper.
We have what they grow beyond.
Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris Ryan and Sam, I am Mike, and thrilled to be back for another edition of the podcast. Guys, sad to not be with you in person. The last episode was a revelation. I feel like we need to get together every single week and do the podcast. We can't do this remote anymore. It has to be all together. Otherwise, we're missing out on truly great moments like what we had with Backseat Iger in our 50th edition of the pod.
Because it's all for one, one for all.
Oh, like one for that. Love. Oh, that was the Brian nice. Adams cover for Prince of Thieves.
Wrong pod again.
Everything I do,
I thought the
I
Brian Adams.
You.
Yeah, that was the
Everything
Brian Adams song
I do,
from Prince of Thieves.
I do it for you.
Yeah, that's from the same song, isn't it?
I don't know.
I think that's the same song. Because it's all for one. No, it's all for love. And love one for
Wait,
all.
Wait, isn't this?
I think you're thinking of the Three Musketeers.
I was just
going to
say, this is
song.
The Three Musketeers with Chris O'Donnell, correct?
Oh, no.
Ooh, it's definitely a Three Musketeers thing.
Wow. Who does that song?
Now, why wasn't Kevin Costner in that?
Kiefer Sutherland was in that.
Wait, wasn't Leonardo DiCaprio in a Musketeers movie?
He
too?
Was. That was the Man in the Iron Mask.
That was the Man in the Iron Mask. It's also Alexander Dumas. And I do have to say, Dumas, and I do need to like beg that we have to cut this out, guys. I can't have this.
No.
This cannot go on my
D.
permanent record.
This is the way we begin.
This is the way to start a podcast.
Computer G. Lockia guy.
Wait, who sings?
Perhaps it is written.
Is it also Brian Adams that sings the other song, though?
Sam is just obvious. Sam is famously obsessed with Brian Adams.
But
he sings "Summer of '69" every time I see
it. It goes back to that "Summer of '69."
Wait, who sings the other song? Is it Brian Adams?
I don't think the other song is a song.
It has to be a song. Sam didn't just make up a song.
I make up songs every week. Why can't Sam do it?
Wait,
guys, I'm going to take this moment to say, Gabe, our only remaining listener, thank you. Thank you for sticking with all of us.
I have a question
Nicole,
for you.
Who's listening to this as I look at her expectantly, waiting for her to laugh.
Yeah.
We appreciate your listen, too.
Right, I wanted to hear
will you
your
please,
song. Yeah.
Will you please write in, Gabe, and let us know who sang the song I'm thinking of, which is called like All for Love, I think. And who, because right. one right. of them was like a trio with him, Rod Stewart, and not Sting, but somebody else.
All right, now I'm kind of losing you, Sam. I think you just made up the song.
No. Brian Adams, Rod Stewart and Sting would never call Brian Adams.
Yeah.
What, was right. that too harsh, guys?
I'm
sorry. Wow.
Sorry,
different echelon.
If you could take it easy on Brian Adams.
Yeah.
I like Summer 69 as much as the next guy, but
wow.
Come on.
I'm
all right, we have some big news to get to in this podcast. We have a lot of news in this podcast.
We said
that is
right
one
before
of the
we
great
recorded
things.
We were going to keep this one tight.
Not happening. Got to
keep it on the rail. Right. Guys, I want to say, if you say Brian Adams, Rod Stewart, and Sting, All for Love,
okay.
You can watch the Vivo video.
I have it pulled up right
And it's
right
from
now.
The album The Three Musketeers, released in 1993. It's
wait, it actually is from The Three Musketeers?
Yeah, of course. A song
hilarious.
Called "All
so
for
he's
Love."
Done two
yeah,
movie,
of course.
Two
hang on,
movie
hang on, hang
songs.
On. Let's Sorry. Can we all name the Three Musketeers in this movie? It's Gerard Depardieu,
yep.
Kiefer Sutherland, Oliver Platt, and who else? Who's
Chris
the...
O'Donnell?
No, Chris O'Donnell. But then there's also is it Gabriel
That's
Byrne?
The four.
Really?
Oh, Gabriel like Byrne is in it, but he's the bad guy.
No. He's one of the other Musketeers, isn't he?
Is that so? Gabriel Byrne is. Sheriff of Nottingham?
No.
Is
that
the bad guy
stop.
In the Three Musketeers?
That's Robin Hood.
The Sheriff of Nottingham, right?
No, it's the
there's
Cardinal.
There's three Musketeers plus
Wait.
D'Artagnan. Chris O'Donnell
Herod?
Played D'Artagnan.
Herod, is he the bad guy, or is that the
Are
Bible?
We talking about the 2011 one, or the 2000?
We're talking like 1998
You're talking about the Paul
W.S.
Anderson
one,
yeah.
Logan Lerman?
Yeah.
No, Tim Curry plays the Cardinal as the bad guy.
Wow.
Curry. Man, he should have been
there's
in the
not
Star
five.
Wars
there's not five Musketeers, but I do feel like you're right that Gabriel Byrne is in that movie.
He's another Musketeer.
I'm glad talking about how we feel about Gabriel Byrne being in movies.
All right. Well, look, we've got to get to some big news.
I'm not seeing him. I'm sorry. I'm looking it up.
We got to get to some
Malkovich
big news.
I know Malkovich is in The Man in the Iron Mask.
Yeah, it's a different Three Musketeers movie.
He plays the Sheriff of Nottingham,
Charlie
right?
Sheen. Charlie Sheen is in that movie.
He plays Herod.
Yeah. No, he plays Aramis.
Charlie Sheen is in which movie?
Aramis? Three Musketeers?
We're mixing up two Musketeer
You're talking
movies.
About There's two different guns. Ones. Now Chris is talking about Young Guns. He's always talking about Young Guns.
All right, look,
and this
I gotta
has
get
been
this
the droid you're looking for.
I have to get this podcast
a Duma podcast, a dumbass podcast.
Truer words have never been spoken. Okay, so we have news to talk about in the Star Wars universe. There's a lot of things for us to get into, but before we do that, Sam, I think you've had a fantastic idea for our listeners as we enjoy talking about all the different things we will in this episode. You have something to offer up to our listeners. So for those of you, mostly Gabe, if you'd like to find something to take home following this episode of the pod, Sam, what do you have for them?
So as many of you who don't watch the pod, as it's not filmed, and so that would be impossible, would not know. I frequently draw and sketch during the pod, so I'm going to turn it over to my three co-hosts to pick a character, and that will be my sketch for tonight. And then I don't really have a clear idea. Do we want to do, like, if somebody emails in and just has a great question, we can send it to them? Do we want to do reviews on iTunes or something? But maybe it's just writing in, reaching out in any form. Reach out, let us know you're alive, and this drawing could be yours.
Well, I think we've all decided it's D'Artagnan, right? That's who he's going to draw.
Oh, I was going to. I was actually going to say Constable Zuvio. if you wanted to draw Constable Zuvio,
I was going to say Portos.
Okay,
that would have been a good one too.
Dressed as Han Solo.
Okay,
could you do the Three Musketeers of Star Wars?
I'm gonna do
which would be C-3PO, BB-8, and R2-D2.
Yeah.
They kind of are the Three Musketeers.
Sam, do that. Draw
so
three.
The droid trio.
I like it.
Okay.
The All droid.
Right. I'm very thankful to Mike for getting me something that I can do.
The droids and the iron droids. That's really.
This almost failed before it got started.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, if you write in, this is your prize for having listened through this part of the episode.
And we greatly appreciate it if you've hung with us to this point.
We had a great 50th episode, though. That was so much fun.
And now we're coasting on to 100, baby.
Yep.
All right. There is big news that we have to talk about. And the great thing is this news only just broke. Moments ago, before we recorded this pod, Jon Favreau posted on his personal Instagram account, and maybe it's because some leaks were coming out of the production of the new Star Wars live-action series, that Jon Favreau felt like he needed to get some information out there. Obviously, it was coordinated with Lucasfilm. Everyone is on board with him sharing this. But we now know the name of the new series, The Mandalorian. And I will read what is a mock-up of a crawl, which we will probably not see in the series, but Jon Favreau has on his Instagram. It is after the stories of Jango and Boba Fett, another warrior emerges in the Star Wars universe. The Mandalorian is set after the fall of the Empire and before the emergence of the First Order. We follow the travails of a lone gunfighter in the outer reaches of the galaxy far from the authority of the New Republic. And that is all we know from the statement from Jon Favreau in his Instagram account. That sets us up for a lot of conversations, but we now know that this will focus on a Mandalorian, if not setting the series on the planet of Mandalore, which I think has gotten a lot of Clone Wars and Rebels fans very excited. Mm-hmm. And if you're a fan of Boba Fett and Jango Fett as well, though I believe it was pointed out that Boba Fett and Jango Fett both were not Mandalorian. They just had Mandalorian armor. So right. An interesting start for Jon Favreau. Misattributing actually a Mandalorian.
It does seem a little interesting, like they're trying to kind of rewrite history a little bit there. After the stories of Jango and Boba. So the fact that they say that leads me to believe that Obi-Wan won't be in the series.
No, Chris.
I'm just relieved. When I first heard the title, I thought it was a series about the car from Back to the Future who got up and like walked and lived a life.
Oh, Ryan, that's the DeLorean.
I thought it was the man DeLorean.
The man.
The man.
Well, I mean the man. Yeah, DeLorean, who designed the cars, DeLorean Motor Cars. DMC.
I'm really glad we got this back on track. But yeah, I think Favreau is gonna have to, issue some kind of statement about.
Yeah, his
canonical faux pas.
Yeah, exactly. That's like I'm already a little confused. But I first, yeah, I'm a little upset.
There are also set photos that have come out, which look like they are on a planet similar to Tatooine. There are moisture evaporators on the set.
Wait, this thing is already... In production. I didn't realize this was already filming. I feel so dumb. I'm behind.
Mm-hmm. So, in production, filming already. Potentially an 8-episode first season for the new Disney streaming service, as we've talked about before.
So
There is also one other rumor, which we will not get into deeply because I think it is very much... unsubstantiated at this point. Pedro Pascal of Game of Thrones fame has been rumored to be in the lead role. We'll find out more if that is the case. Mm-hmm. What we do know is that the show is The Mandalorian and it has begun production, and Jon Favreau has been seen on set. So this is all happening. We know those two things concretely. 8 episodes, we don't know for sure, and Pedro Pascal up in the air, but that's what we know.
The fact that it's on Disney's new streaming service and it's also Jon Favreau leads me to believe that it's going to have a very large budget. You said 8 episodes? Is that
rumor? That's the rumor. And then we had seen before, I believe there was that information where it was going to be at least $10 million an episode, correct?
Yeah, so that means they can get the pull of, say, a Ewan McGregor.
Chris.
I think we're going to see Ewan McGregor in this series.
Chris, it's starting to come off as sad.
This takes place between the conclusion of Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, so I don't think we're
I gotcha.
Here's
I'm sorry.
What was that I said about listening to the full statement?
I'm sorry. I read this thing 6 times and I did not make sense of it.
It's a reading comprehension thing. It's throughout Chris's entire life. Please don't write in.
There have been a lot of fan theories.
Fan theories. Sure, is that what you call your friends? No. The first thought I had when I saw that the sort of Mandalore rumor was confirmed, was I was like, Jon Favreau. Focusing on a Mandalorian, do we think this is his second crack at a Cowboys and Aliens story?
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
It feels to me like he's setting up for a Western. His statement very much leads into like this idea of like as a new government is forming, the sort of lawlessness and expansionism that's probably happening. I don't know. Westerns, you know, were dominant for a long time for a reason. They're a fun watch, so it could be cool.
They're a foundational part of Star Wars as well. George Lucas has always said that he was influenced not only by the serials of Flash Gordon, but also Western. Right. So.
Who's George Lucas again?
Yeah, we'll follow you up on that.
I swear to God, if I have to listen to Jon Favreau talk about how everything he did was practical again.
So,
what if he gives you another coin?
I mean, I think setting this on Tatooine with Ewan McGregor is a great idea.
we've gotten so far away from
the
real
discussion.
That
he's having made.
Oh boy!
No, I think. Look, I think that the idea of, I like the setting. I like the idea of that early days of the government. I hope there's a little bit of a political story to the show, and I hope it's not super clumsy. Like, I think it's a fascinating period of the history because we do wonder, like. What went so wrong with the new government that there was space for the First Order to grow?
Right.
And I think the idea of a perception of that from the fringes of the Star Wars society is really potentially interesting. I think, you know, it maybe is a safe play, but, you know, the design of Mandalorians and the armor and, like, the sort of history of being a very, like, truthfully, I don't know. I think of them as, like, a very Spartan-like culture from... You know, I haven't watched all of the animated stuff, which I think gets more into it, but they feel very much like a warrior, you know,
well,
type.
I mean, even at that, the Mandalorian culture has kind of changed throughout that time period up to where we are now. I bet we'll get some Phasma. I'm trying to think of what cameos we're getting from the movies here. I bet we'll get a Phasma cameo.
Well, they have, you know, Disney announced that they're doing, with the Marvel characters, they're doing a Loki show.
Yeah,
and they,
it's going to have
to. With Tom Hiddleston and the Elizabeth Olsen.
Right.
Not Black Widow.
Scarlet Witch.
Scarlet Witch, thank you. Yeah. Sorry, I was blanking, guys. But, but like, they are committing to those actors for those shows. So, like, there's a world in which...
Yeah,
Chris isn't as crazy as he sounds.
Right, that's kind of what I was thinking about. That's why I kept bringing up Ewan McGregor.
Oh, that's what you were thinking about.
I also misunderstood what was going on here with this. This news just came out, folks. It just came out.
Chris is still trying to figure out how to read it.
That's why you're not getting your normal, you know, coherent, really well thought out Chris that you're used to.
Exactly. And this is Ben. My hot and fresh for the night.
Oh boy. Sam, you kind of touched on it. The thing that I'm excited about is there is a lot of rich lore that goes along with the Mandalorians, and I feel like there's opportunity there to play into what has already been established, even though none of us have really put ourselves deeply into the Clone Wars and Rebels. I mean, we've seen Rebels, we've seen Clone Wars, but we don't know the Mandalorian history the way that maybe some other fans do. I think this is a great place to begin because you get that hardcore fan base who loves the Mandalorians, the Mandalorian mercs who are out there, but also you have a touch base that for those who are familiar with Star Wars, who know the armor, who know Boba Fett, and even if you're not a big fan of the current extensions of the universe, you see that and you're like, oh, that's immediately recognizable. So I enter into this series where I know very little and I have something to ground myself. And I think that's an important thing for a huge bet in this live action series that we've talked about before, which could go horribly wrong and take a negative turn that has been different from what we've already seen from Star Wars. Considering that Bob Iger is a little gun shy right now, I'm really surprised that there hasn't been any reservation about the live action series. Right. They're going to go full steam ahead on that, and yet they're going to pull back on the film development. That's interesting.
Well, with the live action series, though, they have so many other things kind of tied into it with the Disney streaming service and whatnot. You know, like they're more willing. There's more of an ROI for them on that because if they have the Star Wars series, it's not only serving the Star Wars franchise, it's serving the Disney brand.
Sure.
And you know, we make fun. Jon Favreau is a dependable, should I call him a filmmaker?
Competent? Let's use your words for Ron Howard. Competent? Is that what you said?
He's competent. Yeah, no, he's dependable. He's not going to make something bad, but he's not
going to
make
something great.
I mean, he made Chef. Oh, man.
Wow.
Yeah, that movie's pretty turdy. but, like, even that, it's competently made.
Right.
Maybe in this movie he'll cast himself as someone who's in a love triangle with Scarlett Johansson and Sofia Vergara. That seems more like a science fiction show.
Hey, nice.
I mean, hey, he's coming hot off of directing the pilot of Young Sheldon.
Oh, he directed that?
Did he direct the pilot of Young Sheldon?
He did. He also did The Orville, which I've watched a couple. It's not terrible.
Exactly. Favreau. Not terrible.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. It's watchable sci-fi.
Let's hope the writer's room is really good.
I wonder if we'll get like a little, like, not to give too many spoilers about Rebels or anything, but I wonder if we'll have some Sabine cameos or anything like that. That would be nice.
It would be a much older version of Sabine.
Exactly. But I think it kind of fits with what they did with Clone Wars and Rebels to have an older Ahsoka.
Well, Ahsoka is actually, though, there is this weird time for the conclusion of Rebels.
Yeah.
And both Ahsoka and Sabine could come to around and see them. And maybe Ezra as well. But
yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, it could be neat if they tied that in because the Mandalorian culture did play a large part in Rebels.
Well, Sabine is a Mandalorian.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Well, there's more to be seen when we'll find out a little bit more information, but it's exciting to know they're in production.
Is there a release date on
this? No, but the service is supposed to launch sometime in 2019, and I believe that's the second half of 2019, and you know this is going to be one of their main launch titles.
Yeah, I'm betting probably around holiday 2019. I think they'll probably give the streaming service a little bit of a head start.
But you think Holiday, though, that wouldn't that cross up with episode 9?
Yeah, I would. Well, when I say Holiday, sorry, that was, I mean, like, episode 9 comes out December, right? Like the normal December weekend, yeah. The third weekend. I think this is probably early to mid November. So around.
Oh,
like
you're on that retail
time.
Holiday schedule, is what you're talking
yeah,
about. Right?
Yeah, exactly. start playing me my Christmas music right after August, baby. But wow. I think probably around then, so then they can get a little bit of a head start. It juices up people for episode 9. It kind of gives the streaming service a boost after it's been going for a little bit. So I think that'll probably be the move.
When does whatever DC movie is coming out? That's when they'll release it.
Or like they'll release it. Feige just gives a call in and he's just like, "Can you guys just do me one favor?"
I mean, he doesn't even need it at this point.
He is really Disney's guy, though. He's Jungle Book, Lion King.
You're talking about Favreau?
Yeah. Avengers.
He's Disney's guy, man. He really saved that company, pulled it right out of the gutter.
But I feel like they owe him a TV series. He's a producer on all these movies.
He made Iron Man before it was acquired by Disney. Yeah.
He made that second Avengers movie and people watched it?
No, he didn't. That was Joss Whedon.
No, he was an EP on it, is what I'm saying.
Oh.
He helped produce it.
Oh,
Chris,
sure.
Listening to you like just scramble your way out of being wrong.
I'm not. How is that
he
wrong?
He was an EP on it?
Yeah.
And he's been an EP on like every Marvel movie in name only because it was in his contract from Iron Man.
Really?
Do you think he was like in the meetings for Age of Ultron?
I don't know. I wasn't. Were you there? I wasn't there.
He's got an incredible agent.
He's not in every Marvel movie, just the Iron Man ones.
Yeah, guys, we really need to do the pod in person. We're falling apart here.
Iron Man 3.
He's in Spider-Man Homecoming.
I never want to see Chris.
He's in Spider-Man Homecoming.
All right. What else? There's other news we
need
to discuss.
What does that have to do with him being an EP?
I'm just saying he's done a lot of Disney movies. That was the point.
And you think they owe him?
Yeah.
He was doing them a favor?
They owe him a TV series.
Oh, we owe John. Oh, God. Yeah. I don't know where we'd
he
be if it
wasn't
for
in every Marvel
John.
Movie. He was in Avengers, EP, Iron Man 3, EP, Age of Ultron.
Okay,
EP.
All right, Chris, we're going to hold you there.
Jungle Book.
I guess EP, I'm not going to hold
you. Director.
And what was the show? Revolution.
I'm naming the credits, but it's not that many Marvel movies. Not as many as you'd think.
Okay. Are we
you
good?
Were just talking
can we,
about
can
how,
we move,
that
can
was
we move
your
on
point.
To the other news? We got some other
Please
news?
Do, Mike, I beg you.
Wait.
No,
he was a producer on Swingers.
Mike, if you could move on, that'd be so money.
News that broke while we were in between episodes. Kathleen Kennedy will be back for 3 more years of finding more opportunities to highlight the work of Jon Favreau. She has renewed her contract, and Kathleen Kennedy, despite all of the negative sentiment towards her on the internet from a small sect of unhappy people that we don't want to really engage with, she will be returning and creating more wonderful moments. And if there was a perfect sum up of her experience and time with Star Wars, I really appreciated the article that was put out by Forbes, which had a headline of Disney rehires Kathleen Kennedy after acclaimed successful Star Wars movies. As in, she was at risk of not making a return following her $4.85 billion of worldwide box office in the time that she has been running Lucasfilm, because you know that the backlash meant more than that amount of money she made for Disney.
After a string of nigh unprecedented financial, critical, and fan success, Disney made the brave move of rehiring Kathleen Kennedy.
They owed it to her.
I don't know if they're going to make it through this, guys.
I think this is thrilling. I think that Kathleen Kennedy is a genius, and I think that she's done, you know, obviously, like, people are holding Solo up to this, like, as, like, the thing, but, like, I think that she has done a phenomenal job with the franchise. I don't think that there could be an argument against it other than like,
and I'm,
you know, from a financial standpoint, like, of course, I mean, if you disagree with creative decisions, that's your opinion.
I'm happy she wants to do it because I think she's the most capable person for the job.
Like, literally think, is there anyone in Hollywood more qualified than her to do it?
Yeah, exactly. Not at all. Like, she's the pedigree that she's grown up on. Like, just, I think that, like, she's the person for this. And I'm hoping, I'm, like, so happy she's not, like, disenfranchised with it.
That childhood of yours that's getting ruined by her, she made it.
She did it. So just so you know. She's helping
your
children.
She brought it into this world, and she could take it out.
She's bringing it to your children. You're just too old now to realize it.
Ryan, I didn't even really think about it until you said it, is that there is not a single other person out there who could do a better job than her or who has a better resume than her. Mm-hmm. She is absolutely the person who should be running and producing all of these films if you want them to be anything like they were when you were a child. For children right now, she is the best person.
She was there.
Yeah.
She was there the whole time.
Remarkable.
I'll tell you what. Wimbledon actor Jon Favreau wasn't there.
Oh, jeez.
He played Ron Roth in Wimbledon.
You know what? Honestly, though, if you want to go back, I've said it before on this podcast.
You guys want to
say it again.
Now?
The greatest Jon Favreau role is in Rudy.
Yep. Bebop.
Bebop is the best role of Jon Favreau's career. Bebop. And I think he should have stopped right there.
Yeah. It's way better than Gutter in PCU.
Sam, do you have any thoughts on Kathleen Kennedy before Chris gets us way off track again?
Sorry.
No, I do. I think you guys have really hit on the big things, and that she is the most qualified. It's been an incredibly successful run, and I think that she is a rare producer. If you know, when you start getting really deep into like reading the trades or reading, you know, film websites or blogs or news, you know, it's like she's one of the rare producers where when you see her in interviews, I buy her passion for Star Wars, for the material, for like the legacy of it. Like, I don't know, I think that to everybody who thinks that she's, you know, more invested in an agenda, or she's more, you know, invested just as a you know, a financial counter or something, like, just look at her talk about Star Wars and look at her career, look at the places she's chosen to work and the people she's worked with. I mean, I think there's no question that she's a filmmaker, and films of this size, like, they are a producer's, they are a producer, like, they're a producer's
medium.
She is
hiring directors.
And I think it's an interesting point that Forbes article made, which was to really highlight that and say, like, look, at this level, what she's doing is what a producer does. You know, you don't, like, this is not an indie film. You know, you don't have, like, a director has all the power and a producer is just providing the money. No, the producer is, you know, representing Disney, and Disney's the one who are making these movies and putting them out and keeping the schedule. So her job is infinitely more important and bigger, and she's killing it. She's great. I love it.
Exactly.
She also
bow down, get used to it. If you don't like it, I'm sorry. You know, if you're a person who doesn't like what she's doing or doesn't like the new Star Wars, like, all I can say is that I'm sorry that magic doesn't work on you anymore. Like, I'm sorry that you can't enjoy a magic trick. That's on you, not on the people making magic, you know?
She also comes from this, like 70s, like, movie industry, like the 70s Hollywood attitude of producers who were passionate about film.
Yeah.
And they hire directors who they think will do great jobs with them. Like, which seems obvious, but I'm not sure that's, like, the state of things all the time now. And she's, like, this brilliant producer who has always worked with top-tier talent. And I was watching... I watched Brick the other day for the first time in years, which was Rian Johnson's first film, I loved at the time, and I still love. And I was watching it. That's a movie that he made in, I think it was 05 or 06. And they made it for, like, $500,000. And I was watching it being, like... In 12 years from when they made this guy was making Star Wars movies.
Right.
And it's like,
Yeah.
But he also wasn't one of those like indie directors like a Colin Trevorrow or something who made like one quirky indie movie and was pulled up to make Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
It's like she saw in him a specific talent. And I think that like even, you know, JJ, it seems like an obvious choice, but he also is a specific talent. They were looking for someone to do something specific with episode seven. And Ron Howard, who I make fun of, but I don't think she hired him just because he was safe. I think, you know, she saw a talented filmmaker who, like, she makes the moves that need to be made at any moment, you know? And it's like, I have a feeling, obviously, I don't know her personally, but I have a feeling she's the smartest person in the room always. And it's exciting to have someone like that at the helm of this franchise. Because, like we said, who is another choice? Like, I feel like a lot of people who were, like, would troll on Kathleen Kennedy, their choice would be, like, Kevin Feige. Right, but to me, I'm like, do you really want someone who's going to immediately oversaturate the franchise? Not that Marvel is built to be oversaturated.
Right.
It's built like comic books. You know, there's like five issues a month.
She's run a production company that's run Star Wars movies, E.T. I mean, she's done Jurassic Park, Saving Private Ryan, like... She's been around for every type of movie, every type of huge movie that we've had in the last 20 years. Like she's seen every type of movie.
Also,
her career mirrors like the blockbuster.
Right.
In so many ways, you know what I mean? Like she knows blockbuster filmmaking.
Right.
Better than anyone.
Yeah, like she's literally seen Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Like she's seen them all, like every type of movie.
But right, Ryan, yeah, you
like
bring
she
up...
was the person who like was cutting the checks for Jurassic Park.
Right.
Like Steven Spielberg had to answer to her, like for like, oh, we're going over on this.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. You bring up Kevin Feige, and I think if you wanted someone to come in and make inconsequential films, I honestly feel like the Marvel movies are great popcorn entertainment, but I'm not walking away with the same kind of introspective feelings that I have following The Last Jedi. And I credit Kathleen Kennedy and Disney and Lucasfilm for allowing something to be that kind of blockbuster film, but also make me think more than any other blockbuster film has done in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched...
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm biased. I'm a co-host of a Star Wars podcast, but I've watched The Last Jedi probably now like six or seven times, right?
And
Sam's right there with you.
Each time,
he's watching it nightly.
Each time I appreciate it more. It's a dense film. It's very considered. Mm-hmm. I saw Infinity War in theaters, and I adored it. I've watched it on iTunes.
It's a ton of
half
fun.
Times,
I really enjoy
and
it.
I enjoy it too, but without an audience, that movie does not play. Right. The way that like a Star Wars movie plays, like you could watch a Star Wars movie alone at night, and be like, "This
it's
is
a,
like,"
and
I,
we
I,
do.
Jesus.
It's
a full meal.
It's a special thing.
It and is. Let's be honest, if you're a fan, you will watch them alone.
And I also like the fact that by speaking to her as a producer, you proved my earlier point that the producers do have an impact on the movies. So you spoke effortlessly about how the producers had such an important role making movies.
Look, to pivot,
I'm actually impressed with the critical argument that Chris just made. So
to pivot away from that, Ryan, you brought up again the way that Kathleen Kennedy has influenced this. You're not only hiring directors, you're hiring producers, and she hired Ron Bergman with Rian Johnson. And from what we saw in the director in The Last Jedi, Ron Bergman was a big part of the why that movie was so spectacular, because he made it all happen with his incredible organizational talent as a producer.
Yeah, and he was a producer on Brick. Like, him and Rian Johnson
have been working together
forever. And, like, I could see how for a bigger producer like a Kathleen Kennedy, that might be a thing where it's like, listen, you can't do this with your friends, okay?
Right.
But she obviously is savvy enough to know, like, clearly they work best together. Like, she wants to make artists feel comfortable and safe. And, like, you know, obviously it's not always the case because people get fired left and right over there. But, you know, like, she clearly puts people in a position to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's kind of up to them, I think. You know, like Lord and Miller, we talked about this. Like Chris said, like, they weren't, it seemed like they weren't making a movie.
Right.
Like, yeah, if they kept going, there wouldn't be a movie.
They were just kind of treading water. Like, they were seeing, like, let's see what this does.
All right, I think this leads us into our next topic, which is there's news around the backlash that we have discussed at length. So we don't need to get so much into the toxic aspects of the fandom. Maybe they're not actually as toxic as we thought, and maybe they're not as real as we thought, because the news came out from a study that was done by a professor at the University of Southern California Center for Digital Future. Morton Bay wrote a paper about the backlash, and what he found was 50.9% of respondents on social media who were negative about The Last Jedi were likely, and I think he had confirmed, Russian bots similar to the 2016 election, as in they were trying to force chaos among political conversation in 2016 and now pop culture conversation in the wake of The Last Jedi.
That's kind of fascinating also because in that documentary for The Last Jedi, they talk about the Russian fans.
Yeah.
like is that, was that part of it as well?
No, those were just the people who really love Hux.
Yeah, I guess, but like, were they not people that liked Hux? Like, I'm concerned now.
No, it's just one guy who set up all the bots. Yeah, he exactly. really loved Hux.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Is it Putin? Does Putin love Hux?
Well, didn't Putin recently say, I believe it was at some kind of summit, that he loves porgs. He just loves them.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't get enough.
Yeah, yeah. At the G8, Putin's like,
there's a shirtless photo of Putin and porgs out there. Yeah,
he's riding a porg, shirtless.
This just continues the oddity of the arc of The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
It's like, what's there even to say about this? Like, why Star Wars?
I think
we're going after their hearts? Like, I think
early on in this podcast, we talked about Star Wars is kind of something you can go to any part of the world and reference Star Wars, and chances are someone's going to understand that reference, I think. I mean, I think there is probably a part of this Russian bot thing happening, but I think moreover, if it did, it's the Russians saw an opportunity for a nationwide discussion to interrupt.
Well, and it's also because of the fact that The Last Jedi in a lot of ways is a progressive film, and
exactly.
so they saw the opportunity to sow discontent among those who don't want to see the progress.
Yeah, exactly.
The
like I don't think it's they're solely responsible. I think they saw a trend happening and they jumped in on it and tried to help it by publishing bot reviews and that kind of stuff.
Lord and Miller have now blamed Russian bots for getting them fired.
Exactly. Yeah. And canceling Last Man on Earth.
I just think it's kind of fascinating.
Was that a low blow?
We've devoted how much time on this podcast talking about this stuff, you know, and like how easily we kind of get wrapped up in what we're reading on both like actual media outlets and like real media, and then also social media and like what our perception is. And so it's just like, it's kind of highlighted like all this stuff, whether we're talking about, you know, politics and the election, or whether we're talking about, you know, sort of someone finding out that like, oh yeah, a lot of the criticism of that fun movie franchise that we've been writing about tearing itself apart is like manipulated is just, I don't know. It's eye-opening and a little scary to me that it's like, is that where we are now? It, you know, that we're that easily manipulated and convinced of things? Because I don't know. I use all these services. I use Facebook. I use Instagram. And it's like, how do I even know what I'm reading anymore?
Sam, you at least have some judgment to try to discern what is real and what is not. There are a lot of people using these platforms who don't take in any common sense when they consume media. And that's part of the problem, is no one has any, well, not no one, but these, a lot of people don't have media literacy anymore. So they see something from something that sounds like a real publication and they automatically believe it.
Yeah.
What if they looked into this and the Russian bots that were attacking The Last Jedi were the work of a Russian bot engineer who was hired to infiltrate the American election and
right, yeah, I'm sure.
But
you got distracted.
But he was like, you know what I really love? Star Wars.
Right.
Yeah, and he exactly. got sidetracked and he made
he accidentally typed Star Wars to have something to do with it.
You know what
he typed Star Wars in the wrong box. You know, I think though the fact that we see something like Kathleen Kennedy committing for 3 more years, I mean, I think that shows that the good forces in this Star Wars universe are winning. I mean, I think this is it's systematic of trolls and we're trying to find answers like why is this happening, and if this is part of it, then that honestly weakens the argument for everyone else to be like, well, let's say we thought it was 50-50. Now maybe it's 25-25-50.
When you watch the evening news and you go to bed and you're laying there staring at the ceiling and you're going, why, God, why? Yeah. Why didn't more people like The Last Jedi?
Yeah, exactly. Now you could say, you could say 50% of the people did, 25 did it. 25 were just computers saying whatever they thought that was right. We're good. This is a win for us.
We are getting closer to the close of this pod, and I think with this being, in addition, more focused on the breaking news, we will get to our segments in the next edition of the show. The last thing we have to
I already gave you my hot and fresh.
We always get the hot and fresh. We know
throughout the pod. The Favreau stuff, that was also all hot and fresh, okay. For the record. Okay.
You know what he couldn't make in that chef movie? It was a hot and fresh molten cake. It's the inciting incident.
I remember a lot of that movie. The Resistance.
I got a coin, Mike. I gotta love it.
Resistance premieres this weekend, October 7th. A 2-part episode.
Ooh, I love
the
it.
The first reviews are already in, but we get a chance to watch a new piece of Star Wars extended story. So what's everyone's anticipation for this premiere on Disney XD on Sunday night?
I'm super excited for it. I'll be there. I did the same thing I did with Rebels. I'll be there for episode.
And I think we'll have updates on the pod for those of you excited to hear more about Resistance. Not the Resistance, just Resistance. We will talk about it each week on the pod.
I'm also very excited. I'm going to have to track down some kind of cable provider password in order to watch it. But I have a few days to do that, so I'm stoked. I'm glad to have a thing every week to keep the podcast content streaming.
Hey, this episode was chock full of streaming.
Well, in case we had to dig into more adaptations of classic literary works,
this was the first one. I'll just say, like, I'm super excited. I'm excited because this is the first one I think that started since I've been on the pod and that I'm going to be able to do week to week. So it's like I'm actually going to commit to trying to watch this one live. It's really fun to binge and go through and watch stuff that has aired previously, but
yeah.
There's no urgency to it, right? You know, I'm kind of getting to it as I want, which that's a blessing also as a, you know, busy human in the world, but like I'm excited for a little bit of that that old school appointment TV, you know, like watching something on the reg like when it's airing. You know, as someone who doesn't watch Game of Thrones, I haven't had that in a while. So
the only other show for me that does that is The Good Place. And that's only because I want to make sure that the conversation that's happening online that I already know about it, because I love that show. Love it.
It's great. It's great. I will endorse that.
Interesting crossover. The Good Place has the voice actor of Sabine from Rebels in The Good Place. And it's Tia Sakaar, I believe is her name.
Mm-hmm.
Very popular. And, she will not be in Resistance this weekend, but there are some great talented voice actors in the upcoming show. Interesting bit of news, if anybody did hear about this as well, the voice actor who is portraying Leia in Resistance is in some hot water, and there are requests out there for her to be removed because she was mocking Dr. Ford following the testimony that she gave in front of Congress about Brett Kavanaugh. That's a whole other conversation about politics, but when a voice actor who's part of Star Wars does that, I'm not surprised to see some of the backlash, and maybe appropriate that maybe she shouldn't go forward as a symbol of actual peace, hope, and tranquility that Leia always is.
Interesting.
It was a weird move on her part to go hard at Dr. Ford. Like, you know, I don't even think that no matter where you're falling on things. I feel like that feels like kind of a weird blow.
Pretty, yeah. I think she made an off-base joke in it, and she since tweeted apologies, I've seen, but that could be a little early.
She doesn't want to get fired.
exactly.
So, Sam, let's check in. How are you doing on the artwork that's going to go out to one of our listeners, potentially Gabe?
I'm really excited. I'm going to call this one complete, and I think whoever gets it is going to like it. When we drop the episode, what do we think? Should it be a surprise, or should I post it to like our Instagram and social feeds? Or I could post it now, I don't know, while we're recording.
Hmm.
And people will be like, what is this? Trash.
I think post it now and say, listen in for a chance to get this.
We could take this conversation offline.
No.
This has
listeners?
Been Inside the Droids. This is Talking Droids.
Listeners, if we ever get around to launching a Patreon for all of you to support us, this is the kind of content that will be exclusive.
That's a good segue. That's a great kind of cross promo. Yeah.
Actually, Chris,
I really think we should think about recording this next time.
Speaking of promotion, I'd like to say, hey, droid heads, tonight we're sponsored this week by wordcream.org. Wordcream Industries is a Brooklyn-based apparel company specializing in bold typographical design on form-fitting t-shirts. Thoroughly creamed up with wholesome G-rated phrases like Moist Dad Squad, Angel Cram, and Wet Clown Water, designer Nate Kushner thinks droid heads might enjoy a design inspired by his favorite new character from Star Wars, The Last Jedi. It's called Quad Nippled Milk Walrus, and I'm wearing it right now. Listeners can get 10% off their next order by entering the code DROIDS at checkout. Wordcream.org, regular t-shirts that are just normal and fine. So thank you for that. Our sponsored Wordcream.org.
Nice to see that.
Thanks to Nate. We're really excited to have a sponsor and appreciate it. And check out the shirts, guys.
They're very funny. And very awkward and very form-fitting. I like them.
But totally clean.
G-rated.
Just like the pod.
Yeah.
Well, that seems like that'll do it for this edition of the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Join us next week where there's certain to be more breaking news, likely another art giveaway from Sam, and of course Chris will throw in some certain theories, and Ryan will always bring us the knowledge deep into the Star Wars galactic universe. That'll do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast.
Too short for Stormtrooper.
We have what they grow beyond.
Annie? You boys want to go to medieval times? Favreau?
I'm still hung up on this Favreau thing. I'm upset that you guys came down on me hard about Favreau.
Chris, you gonna be okay?